It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Supreme Court struck down a key part of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act yesterday and declared same-sex couples who are legally married deserve equal rights to the benefits under federal law that go to all other married couples. 90.5 WESA's Erica Barris has more on the reaction to the decision in downtown Pittsburgh.
The Supreme Court's decision was screened on a large television in the middle of Liberty Avenue. The street had been closed for Riot or Rejoice, and after the Supreme Court's decision, it was full of people cheering and crying emotional tears. There were mothers and fathers supporting their gay children. There were same-sex couples who had been together for decades. And there were parents there with their young children to teach them about social justice. There were also several city and county council leaders who addressed the crowd. Mackenzie Greener, 23 years old, of Bloomfield, was celebrating in the street with her girlfriend Erica McHugh, who called it a human rights victory for all people. Greenert said she was overwhelmed.
Being a young gay person, this is just amazing. And to see, you know, even these older generations out here, I can't even imagine how much it means to them. But I'm so excited and I'm so hopeful for this future.
Pennsylvania doesn't recognize same-sex marriage. I'm Erica Barris, 90.5 WESA News.
Matt Bartko of Wilkinsburg was at that rally downtown when the decision was announced. He recently was engaged to his longtime partner in a very public way. He shared his engagement story with us and talked about what the Supreme Court decision means for him and his partner.
I recently became engaged during the Pittsburgh Pride celebration downtown to my partner, my longtime partner, Maddie Landy. Maddie proposed to me on stage in front of, it felt like, thousands of people, probably. He was dancing with his company, not dance, and I was filming for them, as I normally do, and they had me on stage to film, which I thought was kind of peculiar, because usually I'd film from the audience perspective, so I was actually a little miffed about that and complaining about it. Just moments before he popped the question, and so the way he did it is there was a break in the music, all of the dancers went off stage, and he pulled the camera off of my head, pulled me out in the middle of all of those people, and I was standing there just kind of awkwardly wondering what the heck was going on, and he danced a little ditty around me and then got down on one knee, and it was absolutely the most amazing, sweetest, most wonderful thing I could think I could have asked to happen to me. So I said yes, and now we are scheduled or slated to get married after a very long engagement, probably another 2 years we're going to be waiting. You know, I think in some way I maybe have the marriage equality discussion going on nationally to thank for planting the seed in his head to propose to me, because while he was away, he knew that the hearings were going on with the Supreme Court, and it got him thinking about whether or not he wanted to spend his life with me. So it planted the seed, because before that, I think that we had been very resigned to kind of this amalgamous, unlabeled lifetime commitment, homosexual life partner kind of thing, you know, like, we didn't have a name for it. You know, the water that we've been swimming in our relationship, where we're just, you know, we're together. We've been wearing rings. So when he proposed, my first thought was, yes, I get to have a party. I get to invite my friends and my family and bring them together and celebrate our love with the people that we love. So the state really was not a part of the equation at that moment. It wasn't until later, when I came down off of the cloud, that I started thinking about the practicalities of it. You know, gosh, does that mean that we're going to have to take a road trip to Maryland or New York? Do we even want to do that? Do we just have a commitment ceremony here and wait for something to happen in Pennsylvania? And we're still kind of juggling with those questions right now. You know, I've been thinking a lot about how validated we feel, even though we've never felt invalidated, because we're surrounded by a wonderful community of people. It is wonderful to be standing here in 2013 with our elected officials, senior leaders, finally coming out and saying, you gay people, you deserve the same rights as everybody else. You know, it makes us feel, on par with the rest of society. That's a really great feeling. You know, I've been thinking a lot about, like, the historical perspective of this and realizing that we are living through the midst of something that probably we'll be looking back on, hopefully with the same just amazement that something like desegregation had to be legislated or decided through the courts. So there's that kind of historical perspective. And, it feels like an upgrade. It feels like we're not second-class citizens anymore, which is pretty cool. But it's also, it's kind of a mixed bag at the same time. I realize it's not a panacea. Yesterday, Councilman Krause, I think one of the first words he said was, "Welcome to full equality." And that sounded great, and it got a wonderful rise out of the crowd. And, for a moment, I just allowed myself to think, yes, this is full equality. But, I realize, and I hope that we all realize, that there's still a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of work, especially in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the only state in the Northeast that doesn't offer at least some kind of civil union. And in Pennsylvania, you can still be fired or evicted for being gay, and that's kind of like a basic human dignity, social justice issue that needs to be tackled. I wonder if even before we can have the question of marriage. So there's a lot of protections that still need to get hammered out. And I'm hoping that the federal decision with DOMA is, I'm really hopeful that that's going to speed that process. And make this the non-issue it always should have been all along as soon as possible. Because, damn it, I just want to have my party and celebrate with my people without having to feel like it's in some way illegitimate.
And that was Matt Bartko of Wilkinsburg. There's a YouTube video of Matt's proposal, which will be posted on our website, WESA.FM. I'm joined now in Studio A by Gary Van Horn, president of the Delta Foundation. Gary Van Horn, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon.
We'd like to hear from you. How does this decision impact your life and your relationship? Call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at #EPLive. Join the conversation at 412-246-2002. Gary Van Horn, what was your reaction when the decision came down yesterday?
Well, Paul, I wasn't alive in 1969 when the Stonewall riots happened, but I guess this was probably my Stonewall moment in history. I was, when we named this event Riot or Rejoice, a response to the Supreme Court, we were hoping for a rejoice, obviously. And I had a feeling that this was going to be the response that we got. So it's a pretty exciting day for all LGBT Americans.
So I had as my next question, were you surprised? It sounds like you were not.
I looked at it like this. This was a decision that was being made by 9 justices, and really, did they want the country is moving every single day. People's hearts and minds are changing. And this is going to be the legacy of those 5 justices or those 4 justices. And those 4 will really go down in history as voting against this, or ruling against this, which is, I don't know that I would want my name on. So
it was close. It was 5-4. It seems that a lot of the decisions that are coming down from the Supreme Court are that close or determined by just that one person who goes yay or nay. As far as the closeness of the decision, what does that indicate to you?
Well, I think that's where the country is right now, too. I mean, we see that 53% of Americans right now believe in marriage equality. And I think every day a person comes out, whether it's a coworker or a friend, et cetera, it's changing people's hearts and minds. And that's where actually full equality will, as Matt talked about, full equality will mean when everybody accepts everybody and treats everybody with dignity and respect. And I think that we're going there, and we see the country changing very, very quickly. So, You know, I think that's what we're really striving for. And as people continue to be who they are, be proud of who they are, this country will continue to change.
The comments by Matt Bartko, you probably heard toward the end of what he was talking about, heard him say that what this decision means for him and his partner and his relationship is that it won't feel like it's in some way illegitimate, even though it does not change the fact that in Pennsylvania, Matt Bartko and his same-sex partner, they cannot be married in this state or even have a civil union, as you pointed out. So what does this decision mean for same-sex couples in Pennsylvania?
Well, it means a lot. I think first it reinvigorates the LGBT community. This was the highest court of the land that came down with the decision that, you know, the Constitution says that everybody should be treated equally. The Equal Protection Clause was put into effect for that reason. So it reinvigorates and it makes people really start to question why they discriminated against a specific community. This is a new law that's now going to be struck down so that now people are going to be treated equally. So we're going to see people that can come out and be proud of who they are, et cetera. And it takes those hearts and minds to change that will continue to focus on what's going on in Harrisburg. Because, you know, we have the 12 states in the District of Columbia that allows gay marriage right now. What's that going to look like to Pennsylvania here in a few years? The economic impacts of having LGBT folks move out of Pennsylvania. We were a leader in Pennsylvania by having one of the first human relations commissions in the 1950s. We're now behind the times that we haven't added sexual orientation and gender identity and expression to that protected class.
And so the fact that in Pennsylvania there is not protection for people based on sexual orientation in the workplace or in terms of, for example, seeking housing, people can still legally be discriminated against. The legislature has not dealt with that issue. It has not dealt with gay marriage or same-sex marriages or even civil unions. Why do you suppose that is in Pennsylvania? And as Matt Bartko pointed out, Pennsylvania stands out from the other states in this region of the country.
Actually, if you actually poll people, about 70 to 80% of folks believe that you shouldn't discriminate on somebody's sexual orientation. And Representative Frankel today reintroduced House Bill 300, which would expand the Human Relations Commission to add protected classes of sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. You know, why don't we have it here in Pennsylvania? Because we haven't focused on it. But this is about treating people with dignity and respect. This is about people's jobs, where they live, et cetera. They should not be. And I think when people really start to understand the LGBT community, including our elected officials that we elect into office, it becomes a priority. And as the LGBT community, I mean, this civil rights movement has moved very, very quickly. And I think we're going to continue to see pressure on Harrisburg to get it done, not only just with you know, the protections, but also gay marriage.
Do you get the sense that there is, however, an entrenched mentality of resistance for whatever reason in Pennsylvania or at least parts of the state?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's a learning curve. If you look, you know, obviously we have Pittsburgh and Philly at the two opposite ends of the spectrum of the state, I guess you could say. And then we have that T in the middle. And, you know, I think it's all about teaching people and people learning about the LGBT. There's a lot of people that are afraid of the LGBT community, that, you know, we're going to do something strange or unnatural or whatever, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, we are just people that want to be treated just like everybody else.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation with Gary Van Horn. He is president of the Delta Foundation. 412-246-2002. Your reaction, yay or nay, to the decision by the Supreme Court yesterday. We'd like to hear from you, and we'd like to know how this decision impacts your life, your relationship. 412-246-2002, the number to call. Again, our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at #EPLive. We were talking earlier, Gary, about changing attitudes, and there are now, according to the research, the polls indicate that more people in the country, in the United States of America, are in favor of gay marriage than opposed. And that is a recent trend just in the last few years. What do you suppose the tipping point has been? What has happened that has changed people's minds about this?
I think the media played a big role in that, and how they represent the LGBT community. You know, one thing that we've seen for many, many years is the media focus on some of the extremes of the community, the drag queens, I guess you could say, or the guy in leather. But at the end of the day, people are just like everybody else, and we're working, hard-class people. And I think what the media has done with a number of different shows on television, et cetera, has really depicted families that have the same struggles as a traditional heterosexual family. And I think that has moved the needle very, very, very quickly.
A lot of people point to Will and Grace as the turning point. What do you think?
Absolutely. Will and Grace was one. But I would even talk about some of the more recent ones that have actually even depicted families in the same struggles. Will and Grace was kind of, yes, a tipping point in the two gay guys that acted very, very gay. But we've seen some very recent ones that talked about, you know, just people that were just being like everybody else, trying to raise a family, having kids, etc.
How much did the statements, do you think, by President Obama and actually before him, Joe Biden, about this time a year ago, how much of an impact did that make?
I think it had a huge impact. You know, one of the LGBT community has struggled for years with the African-American community, and the African-American community, you know, we elected an African-American president that stands with us and believes in equality. And I think that had a huge, as a leader of that community, had a huge, profound impact.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation with Gary Van Horn. We have Rob from Pittsburgh on the line with us. Rob, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi there. How are you guys?
Well, thank you.
It's a very timely show. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm a gay man in Pittsburgh. You know, I've been with my partner for 13 years. I'm just curious. You know, I'm an activist at heart, and I want to do something that will make a real difference to drive that same-sex marriage equality rights for us in Pennsylvania. But my fear is that, you know, we have this Republican governor, and it seems like when you look at the, you know, gubernatorial races, you know, we've always had these Republican governors, and it seems like they have veto power to basically trump whatever we do or say as a majority. I mean, it's all political. I get it. But I guess my curiosity is, I don't know enough about it. I mean, is that true that, you know, we could take all of these steps and then we have this Republican governor who basically just says, sorry, no deal. Do you know what I mean?
Well, our governor, Governor Corbett, is in fact a Republican. But just because he is a Republican doesn't necessarily mean that he's following in lockstep with some party line. I believe Rob Portman in Ohio has said that that he is in fact supportive of gay marriage or same-sex marriage rights. And Gary, I would let you respond to what Rob is saying.
Well, you know, we continue to see people's hearts and minds change. And I mean, I have a 91-year-old aunt who has been a Republican her whole life who voted Democrat last time because he was better on my issues. And she said, you know, I probably aren't going to be around another 4 years, and this is more about you than it's about me. So I think people's hearts and minds can change. I also know that there's an election next May and then in November for governor. So we can always go to the ballot box and elect a Republican, Democrat, or independent that supports the LGBT community.
And we should also mention, too, that just because somebody is a Democrat doesn't necessarily mean that they support gay rights or would agree with what the Supreme Court announced in their decision yesterday. And we're going to look at the decision from a legal standpoint coming up here in just a moment. But I want to thank Gary Van Horn, president of the Delta Foundation, for taking the time to join us in Studio A. Gary, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Paul.
And we'll look at the decision from a legal standpoint with Pitt professor Anthony Infante. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As members of Pittsburgh's gay community continue to celebrate yesterday's Supreme Court rulings, including the declaration that same-sex couples who are legally married deserve equal rights to the benefits under federal law that go to all other married couples, where does that leave gay and lesbian couples here in Pennsylvania, one of the states that does not allow same-sex marriages or even civil unions? I'm joined now in Studio A by University of Pittsburgh law professor Anthony Infante, author of Everyday Law for Gays and Lesbians and Those Who Care About Them. He is an authority on constitutional and tax issues relating to same-sex marriage and the Defense of Marriage Act. Professor Infante, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And also, Gary Van Horn is remaining with us. He is the president of the Delta Foundation. We've asked him to stay for another segment, and he has graciously accepted our invitation to an extended stay. And we welcome you to join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. We wanted to take another call before we went to break, and we will do that now. We have David in North Hills with some reaction to the Supreme Court decision. David, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Sam. Glad to join you. I was elated when I heard the news and have been with my partner since 2001. We live in Ross Township in the North Hills. I am, ironically, a response that I've had from this is wondering if I'd be better off living in a different state other than the state of Pennsylvania in terms of the kinds of recognition that my partner and I would receive. We've put together our own wills and living wills, not recognized by the state, realizing that we would be penalized in terms of tax policy if one of us would die, for example, and we've tried to cover those costs through insurance. We've certainly had concerns about health insurance over time, although my employer does provide benefits for domestic partners. But frankly, what the decision has caused me to wonder is if I'd be better off living in a state where I would get both state and federal recognition of my relationship should my partner and I decide to get married.
Well, I'm guessing Professor Infante can answer that question.
Yeah, well, I'll try to answer it for you. I wouldn't run for the state border yet. I mean, in part because even if a state does recognize your relationship, it's all the planning that you've done has not been for naught. Because if you live in a state that does recognize your relationship, like, say, Massachusetts or New York, unless you're going to stay in Massachusetts and New York forever and never leave the state, you might be traveling through Pennsylvania coming to visit friends. And what if you get hurt and you go to the hospital? You know, I mean, you're not going to be protected by New York law or Massachusetts law. You're going to be worried about how does Pennsylvania, you know, treat your issues? Or what if you own property in a state that doesn't recognize same-sex marriage and you don't have a will because now you're married and you're relying on intestate succession? That state might give your property to someone other than your spouse. So you can't, because we have this patchwork quilt right now of some states recognizing, some states not recognizing, even at the state level, you can't just count on the state that you live in. And then when we're talking about the federal level, I mean, as I'm sure we'll explore more in this program, there's lots of questions that are open, and it's not really clear yet what it's going to be like for anybody, whether you live in a state that recognizes same-sex marriage or not.
So let's have you walk us through what this decision means in the case of Windsor versus the United States.
Okay, so Windsor versus United States is the case that was about Section 3 of DOMA. So there's two different parts of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. One part, Section 2, deals with state-level recognition of same-sex marriages. So it basically says that one state doesn't have to recognize another state's same-sex marriage. That's why Pennsylvania doesn't recognize Massachusetts marriages or New York marriages. That part was not part of this lawsuit, that section. That's still on the books in awaits a challenge on some other day. Section 3 of DOMA, which is the part that deals with federal recognition of same-sex marriages, is the part that was before the Supreme Court in the Windsor case.
So how did the justices arrive at this decision and keeping all of these different elements separate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the decision, and then they tend to narrowly focus on what they need to talk about and really try not to talk about anything else in any of these cases. But in the Windsor case and dealing with Section 3 of DOMA, I mean, the first thing they did was put aside questions of whether people had standing to appeal. I mean, they pushed those aside pretty quickly and then reached the merits of the case. And the court, I mean, the decision was very interesting because it was kind of, as I think Justice Scalia put it, a little bit on the slippery side because it was hard to pin down exactly why they were coming to the decision they came to. And they talked some about federalism concerns, which is, you know, there are different levels of government, state and federal, and saying, well, the states have historically been the ones that determine who's married, not the federal government. And so this implicates that. But then they didn't quite really rely on that. What they seemed to rely more on was the anti-gay animus that was behind the Defense of Marriage Act. And they really seemed to focus on that. And they drew some on the Romer v. Evans case from the mid-90s, the one that struck down Colorado's Amendment 2, which was struck down because it was just all about anti-gay animus. And so that's really what the five focused on in the court, the five that were the majority.
And before anybody gets too caught up in thinking that all of these decisions or legislation like DOMA happens strictly along party lines, President of the United States at that time
was President Clinton. President Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act in 1996. Yeah, so we had a Democrat who signed the Defense of Marriage Act.
So now that has been struck down. So specifically, what changes, what is different under the law with this decision yesterday?
That remains to be seen exactly what the parameters are. I mean, you know, technically speaking, the federal government will now recognize same-sex marriage because we're going back to what things used to be. I mean, actually striking down DOMA is a fairly conservative move. I mean, in the sense that, you know, people always complain about judicial activism and judges getting out in front and doing things that are different from what everyone wants and different from what we've traditionally done historically. Well, for a couple hundred years, we left it to the states to decide who was married. And what this does is goes back to that. I mean, it was actually a pretty radical move for Congress to say, we're going to take over from the states and decide who's married and who's not married. So now we're going back to that. The states are deciding who's married. But then the question becomes, who's going to be considered to be married for federal purposes? So how do we figure that question out? And there'll probably be some easy questions in terms of, okay, if you have somebody who's, you know, married in Massachusetts, lives in Massachusetts, is always in Massachusetts, you know, hopefully they're marriage will be recognized.
What if a couple, a same-sex couple is married in Massachusetts, was married there in a state that recognizes same-sex marriage, it's legal. They've been living there, but then one or both members of the couple they get a great job in Pennsylvania, they move to our state. Then what happens?
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's an open question. I mean there's more than 1,000 federal laws that are that implicate marriage. And you have to go look and see what the different laws say. But, I mean, you know, you mentioned I do tax. I mean, so you're talking about people doing their taxes, which is usually the front line for most of this stuff because everyone files a tax return April 15th and tries to figure out what to do. I mean, there's no real answer yet about what will happen if you have a couple that's married in Massachusetts, lived in Massachusetts, but then moves to Pennsylvania. Do they file married filing jointly on April 15th? There's no answer to that question now.
So what does this mean in a more broad sense for states' rights? Do we know that much?
I'm not sure we know that much yet, because, I mean, the interesting question will be how the federal government decides to handle the question of who's married, because it implicates states' rights at a certain level. Because if they decide to say, well, we'll say everyone's married based on where their marriage was celebrated, then that's basically taking the issue away from the states again. Just like before they were taking the question away from the states that would recognize same-sex marriage with DOMA, now they would then be taking the question away from the states that don't want to recognize same-sex marriage by saying, we don't care, you know, if you have same-sex couples in your state who are married in Massachusetts or Iowa or New York, we're going to recognize their marriage. That's also a state's rights.
It sounds like this is raising more questions than it is answering.
Definitely.
We are talking with University of Pittsburgh Law Professor Anthony Infante. Again, he is the author of Everyday Law for Gays and Lesbians and Those Who Care About Them. He's an authority on constitutional and tax issues relating to same-sex marriage and the Defense of Marriage Act. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a comment or question for either of our guests, also Gary Van Horn, president of the Delta Foundation, is with us. Our number, 412-246-2002. 412-246-2002, our email address, ESSPGH at WESA.FM, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. So now with the focus shifting from Washington to the states, what do you see happening next, Professor Infante?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens next. I mean, you can see already in some of the news reports of, you know, I mean, at some politicians saying, well, this is going to ignite the people who are against same-sex marriage, and then others saying, well, it's going to ignite the people who are for same-sex marriage. I mean, it's just going to continue the battle that's been ongoing now for quite some time. I mean, people don't realize that the same-sex marriage battle, it doesn't date back to the 90s. It dates back to the 70s. In the 70s, there were people who were trying to get married and challenging that in federal court. Back then, it would just get dismissed pretty quickly. But that was the first, you know, foray into trying to get same-sex marriage was back in the 70s. So this has been going on for more than 40 years.
The ACLU announced yesterday on the heels of this decision that it had hired well-connected GOP political strategist Steve Schmidt. He's a guy who worked for President George W. Bush and was a senior advisor to Senator McCain's 2008 presidential campaign. He was hired to lead an effort to gain Republican support for gay marriage in the state. So does the effort shift to working through legislatures to change existing state laws?
I mean, that'll probably be part of it. I mean, part of it will be people trying to move and lobby and get states to pass same-sex marriage laws. I mean, some of it will probably also be more court challenges. I mean, I would not be surprised to see those as well.
And I want to get back to that. But Gary Van Horn, do you see a mobilization effort, a massive lobbying effort, say, for example, in the future in Harrisburg on this issue?
Absolutely. I received a number of calls yesterday from the LGBT caucus in Harrisburg, and they're interested. I mean, the LGBT community is fired up right now, and we need to capitalize on that and get them engaged to make change here in Pennsylvania. You know, I wanted to take – David said he wanted to possibly flee the state and go to another thing. The only thing I want to say about that, too, is go back to that call is say, this is Pittsburgh. This is our home. This is Pennsylvania. This is our home. And staying here and making change happen – is something that we have to do because we have to make Pennsylvania a much better place for all people to live. So,
with the decision yesterday, how can it then be constitutional for states like Pennsylvania to deny the rights of same-sex couples to marry? If a decision comes down that says that same-sex couples who are legally married deserve equal rights to the benefits under federal law that go to all married couples. If you're saying that to deny those rights is unconstitutional, then how can you deny the right to marry two people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. I mean, I think Justice Scalia is right with you. If you read his dissenting opinion, he actually goes through and says, you know, no matter what the majority says, that this case doesn't mean anything for whether the states have to recognize same-sex marriage. He says basically all you have to do is wait. The other shoe will drop eventually. Just listen for it. And he actually goes through in his opinion and cuts and pastes sections from the majority opinion and just changes, you know, basically the references to DOMA to references to state law and says this is the roadmap that they're giving to people to make arguments based on this case to try to strike down state-level prohibitions on same-sex marriage. Granted, then the Chief Justice Roberts, in his opinion, goes through and says these are all the reasons why this case does not apply to any challenge to state-level, you know, failure to recognize same-sex marriage. So you can see, you know, that already, you know, the groundwork is already being laid. The Chief Justice, you know, getting out there and saying, no, you can't use this. And Justice Scalia saying, yeah, that's nice, but this is what's going to happen.
So and there seems to be some argument among people following this. And there are plenty of people who are opposed to what the Supreme Court announced yesterday. In doing this, did the Supreme Court not recognize a constitutional right to marry? Was that seed not planted?
They didn't come out and go that far. No, I mean they basically just said this was, you know, anti-gay. You know, you're basically singling out one group to disadvantage them and demean them and denigrate them, and that is not a basis for any valid law. You can't just pick out one group and hate on them. Basically,
do you envision a case that might go to the Supreme Court that would make gay marriage bans unconstitutional?
Oh, certainly there might be a case that goes, but keep in mind that the Supreme Court gets to choose which cases it hears. So it'll probably wait a little while before it takes one of those.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you'd like to get in on our conversation. We have a few minutes left, and we'll be happy to work you in if you have a question about the – as we work through the legalese and the legal – implications and ramifications of what was announced yesterday. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. 412-246-2002. Our guest, University of Pittsburgh Law Professor Anthony Infante, author of Everyday Law for Gays and Lesbians and Those Who Care About Them, and Gary Van Horn, president of the Delta Foundation, is also with us, involved in the discussion. And another legal question that comes to mind for Professor Infante, if the Supreme Court can block Proposition 8 from taking effect, and this is something that really has to just turn people's legal minds inside out. If you can look at one state and you can block a proposition that opposes gay marriage, doesn't that establish a precedent for striking down same-sex marriage bans in every state?
Yeah, not so much. because the way that they decided the Prop 8 case was that they didn't reach the merits of the case. So they didn't actually say Proposition 8 was unconstitutional. What they said was the people who appealed the lower court decision didn't have standing to bring their case in federal court, and that they didn't have – well, I shouldn't say federal court – didn't have standing to appeal the case from the federal district court, because there's three levels in the federal system. So there's a federal district court, which is the trial level court. Then there's the appellate court. In this case, it was the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. And then the highest court is the Supreme Court. And they said neither at the Ninth Circuit level or at the Supreme Court level was there standing. And so what that meant was is that they just didn't have the right to be in those courts contesting the lower court decision. So that just left the lower court decision where it was. And so you have a U.S. district court judge saying, yes, Proposition 8 was unconstitutional for the following reasons, but U.S. district court opinions are not – they're not binding on anybody,
right?
Basically, they're not binding on a higher court. And, you know, even within the same district court, because you have multiple judges in a district court, they respect each other's decisions out of a sense of comedy, not because they're not comedy like laugh, laugh comedy, but comedy like C-O-M-I-T-Y comedy, just to get along because they don't want a one district court speaking with different voices.
Gary Van Horn, as you hear the discussions ongoing at all levels in the courts and in the legislatures, and realizing that things can go in a lot of different directions. It's a very fluid situation with a lot of moving pieces. What level of anxiety does that create, if any, that you might be sensing in the LGBT community?
I don't know if there's a lot of anxiety. I think we're fired up at this point. I think what yesterday did, if you were down there on Liberty Avenue and were with those 300 to 400 people, I mean, there was a sense that we're fired up, ready to fight this fight and ready to continue to change hearts and minds. And I think that's really what this has done yesterday. It might have not had a direct impact on Pennsylvania and every person that was at that rally, but it gave hope. And I think that that's what it really did.
From a political standpoint, well, I'll save that question. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Let's work in a call from Joanne in Pittsburgh. She asked offline, why is nobody discussing the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution? Very good point, Joanne.
Well, the full faith and credit clause, that's basically what Section 2 of DOMA purports to be about. It says that, in essence, under the full faith and credit clause, one state doesn't have to recognize another state's same-sex marriages. So you have the federal government coming in and overriding what the states do. I mean, there's a lot of academic debate about whether that's valid, not valid, but that's at least what it purports to do. So we have actually a federal statute, DOMA, that's still in force that says that under the full faith and credit clause, one state does not have to give recognition to another state's same-sex marriages.
And we thank you for raising that point, Joanne. And you can certainly, if you don't want to join us on there, you can certainly do what Joanne did and leave your question with our production staff, and they'll pass it along to us. Gary Van Horn, there's certainly a very significant midterm election coming up next year, and then an election in 2016. What do you see happening from a political standpoint based on the momentum that was generated for gay rights yesterday?
I think you're going to see the community and its allies continue to be very vocal about many of the issues that surround the LGBT community. And I think people are going to be excited to go out and vote. I think we saw that in the re-election of our president. And I think every single time, you know, I had a conversation with an older friend of mine who is Republican, who said he probably saw the last Republican president of his lifetime. He's because the Republican Party can't change that quick enough. And I think there is obviously a generational divide also. Older folks don't necessarily understand the gay community, whereas the younger folks actually understand what and are brought up in it without the discrimination, I guess you could say, against this community. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting. I mean, people are fired up and they're ready to win, including at the ballot box.
Gary Van Horn, whom you just heard, is president of the Delta Foundation, and we've also been visiting with University of Pittsburgh law professor Anthony Infante joining us in studio. He is the author of Everyday Law for Gays and Lesbians and Those Who Care About Them, an authority on constitutional and tax issues to same-sex marriage and the Defense of Marriage Act. Professor Infante, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Gary Van Horn, again, great thanks to you.
Thanks.
Still to come, The New Girl on how to get the most out of your visit to Disney World. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.